Chapter 9. Obligations. Yosef questioned the 10 surviving Narthani prisoners several more times while they settled into living around Abbotsford, and he added to his interrogation notes. Mara volunteered to organize his notes into a coherent report when they ran to 50 pages of his scribblings. "Father Vortig and Petter need to read this," she told him, after reviewing the final pages. "But not in this form. Petter could make sense of it, but Vortig wouldn't have the patience, and I wouldn't want Father to miss any of the points." During the next 3 days, Mera pestered Yosef to explain his atrocious penmanship and clarify written comments that had seemed clear to him when he wrote them, but that needed translation for Mera. Not for the first time, he appreciated the clarity of his wife's thinking, as she produced a readable report that included salient points Yosef had missed. Mera sent the report to Kernford in a regular mail packet, and a 6 day later, a response came in an unexpected format. The Kolskor house hosted a pleasant social evening with the Bainham family, Deira, Sistian, Cadwulf, and Selmar. Aelian and Ceres Clithroe prepared and served the evening meal. Ceres was a new widow from the Moreland City battle and worked at the Kolskor house as part of Mera's efforts to provide for families of the dead or incapacitated. Aelian Fawn, the wife of the elderly couple employed by Yosef when he moved out of the Abbey guest quarters to a home of his own, was still spry for her age, but had noticeably slowed down, especially by evening. During the meal, they deliberately kept the conversation away from weighty matters, though without overt intention. Sistian recalled stories of his youth in Kernford, and mischief he and his best friend College Keelan had gotten into. Mera laughed so hard at previously unheard antics of her father's past that tears covered her face and she got the hiccups. Deira, Mera, and Yosef all recalled their own family tales, and the two Bainham sons elicited stories of everyone's days as students and the common experiences with good and bad teachers, tests, homework, and wondering what all of them would do with their lives and where their studies would lead them. When the evening wound to a close, the Bainhams bade Mera and Yosef thanks, collected a promise of a reciprocal evening at the Bainham house, and left, walking toward the abbey. The two moons of Anyar and a sky full of stars provided more than enough light.
"Thank you, Yosef," said Mera, sliding her arm through his.
"Thank you? What for?"
"For being you. For agreeing to marry me after my pathetic proposal of marriage. For our life together. For seeing me for who I am and not trying to fit me into a fixed role.
Oh, I don't know.
Just because. Thank you."
Her words touched him, but he was unsure what he had done to elicit them. Not certain what to say in return, he fell back to his stock reaction to awkward moments and said nothing. When the Bainhams faded into the darkness, Mera gave his arm a squeeze.
"I didn't have time to tell you between when you got home and the Bainhams arrived, but Father is coming to Abbotsford next 6 day."
Yosef looked down at his wife's face, lit by lantern light from the windows of the house.
"College? Coming here? Why?"
"Ostensibly, it's part of his yearly tour of the province. He's always tried to make a circuit to visit each district, meet with leaders and others, and get the pulse of the clan and let the people see him. With everything that's happened the last year, the tour's been delayed again and again, and now he's doing it."
"Do I detect a but in that explanation, and did it start with the word ostensibly?"
"Oh," said Mera, "I don't doubt he regrets delays of his yearly tour, but I suspect a major contributing factor is to meet with you."
She could feel the muscles in his arm tighten.
"Any idea why he wants to meet?"
"Not specifically," she replied,
I got news of the visit in a letter from him today, and he only mentioned seeing you in passing. Most of the letter consisted of updates on the family and questions about the baby. However, with what's been happening, I know Father well enough to suspect two topics he wants to talk with you about.
Let me guess, one of them. Our moving to Kernford.
When we married, you did tell him you'd think about it, Mara said.
I did, and I have, and I'm still happy living here.
Here's where I've lived since coming to Cadellium. All my projects are here, my friends, the university. Oh, Christ, Joseph thought. Am I whining? I hate whining, and here I am doing it. Is it because I think the move to Kernford is inevitable? The move is logical. But it would put me more into the middle of clan and island affairs. Haven't I done enough for them? And I need to watch what comes out of my mouth. I started to say coming to Anya instead of coming to Cadellium. Some people might pass it off as a slip of the tongue, but Mara's liable to remember and eventually begin to suspect the truth.
All right, he said, sighing in resignation.
I promise I'll give it more thought. What's the other thing you think your father wants to see me about? I'm afraid it's just as difficult for you as the first one. He'll want you to become more involved in planning what to do about the Narthani.
Joseph didn't react this time. Although he'd asked the question, he was already sure he knew the answer. He also didn't fool himself about one reason for his reticence to move to Kernford. It would put him in the middle of planning and people looking to him for answers. College Keelan and Vordig Lewis arrived 5 days later in a carriage accompanied by 20 escorts. Mara told Joseph her father had given up trying to travel with fewer guards. With her mother, his daughters, Lewis and Kenrick, and others, more than he cared to count, nagging about his safety, he accepted the inevitable. Joseph was in the Cannon Foundry when Carnegie walked in. The clue to his presence was when he filled the open doorway and cut off outside light.
Joseph, Abbot Bainham asked me to let you know the Hetman arrived. Mara's already headed to see her father, and you're to come for evening meal at the Bainham's house.
Joseph opened his mouth to say something, he wasn't sure what, but he looked at an empty door. Carnegie, his task complete and evidently having nothing else to say at the moment, had departed. Joseph went to the door in time to see Carnegie heading for Abersford, instead of back to the Abbey.
I bet he's beelining for the Snarling Greco, to sneak in an ale before returning to work.
Evening meal was a pleasant occasion, to Joseph's relief. College was staying with the Bainhams, and neither College nor Vordig Lewis broached any subject related to Joseph's moving to Kernford or taking on an expanded role. Joseph found it so enjoyable that the return to reality felt all the more jarring when, as he and Mara departed for home, College, the friendly father-in-law, turned back into Hetman Keelan.
Joseph, Vordig and I will meet with you tomorrow after morning meal, as soon as you can get to the Abbey.
There being no evident acknowledgement expected or any objection anticipated, College turned to continue a conversation with Deera. Mara tugged on her husband's arm to lead him away before he thought of something to say.
Just accept it, Joseph, she said when they were out of hearing. You're going to have to meet with him, so you might as well get it over with. At least you can confirm for him that we'll be in Kernford for the baby's birth, which means I'll need to go to wait for it.
They spoke little until halfway home when Joseph said,
What do you think I should tell him when he brings up the two topics you predicted? I only know what I would do. I'm sure you're even better aware than the rest of us of the advantages for your projects to be in Kernford instead of Abersford. As for the other topic, that's something you have to decide for yourself. I've come to terms with knowing you're different from other men. What seems best to others might not be to you. And I trust your judgment.
He reached over and laid his hands on hers.
Thank you, Mirror. It means a lot to me to have your support when I make decisions I know you don't agree with. I may not always say it, but I appreciate how exasperating I can be.
That's putting it mildly, she said, laughing. But that's part of what makes being married to you such an adventure.
The sun had risen well into the mid-morning sky when Yosef and Mara reached the abbey the next day. Yosef had found reasons to delay, a bit of deliberate passive resistance against the headman's peremptory directive to meet immediately after morning meal. His pleasure at his self-acknowledged petty gesture was spoiled when Kalish took no apparent notice. Compensating for his disappointment was Kalish's surprise that Mara accompanied Yosef with the obvious intent to sit in on the meeting. Not that Kalish minded his daughter's presence. She had attended Boyerman meetings for years as his scribe, and Kalish assumed she would be his ally in the discussion to come. He was to be disappointed.
Let's get started, said Kalish,
sitting in one of three straight-backed armed wooden chairs arranged facing one another in a small meeting room. Vordic Lewis followed suit, as did Yosef and Mara, after he pulled a fourth chair from against the wall for her.
Yosef, I'm not one for meaningless preambles when everyone knows the real purposes of a meeting, said Kalish, in a tone attuned to reasonable people having a reasonable discussion. It's time for you to move to Kernford. Your work here has outgrown Abersford, and we need you closer to the clan center.
I'm aware of the arguments, Headman, but I am still considering the possibility and will be the final judge of whether such a move is in mine and my wife's best interests.
Yosef didn't know for certain what his decision would be, but he wanted to lay out that it would be his decision, although Mera's input and desires would be part of the process. His use of Hetman instead of Kalish was a flag signaling his intent. Kalish's eyes flickered imperceptibly, and Lewis stiffened.
I realize this, Yosef. However, I would ask you to tell me the advantages of staying in Abersford for expanding your current projects, developing new ones, starting up this university of yours, and contributing to the defense of your family, the Keelan clan, and all of Cadellium against the Narthani. Can you do that? If you can and are convincing, I won't bother you again on the topic.
My God, he's ruthless, thought Yosef, both amused and resentful, resorting to logic and reason. He knows as well as I that there are no such arguments and that I don't want the move simply because I don't want to leave my relatively sheltered life in Abersford. First, let me say that Mara and I have talked, and we're agreed that soon she will go to Kernford, Yosef replied, delaying an answer. The baby's still a few months away, but we think she shouldn't delay the travel. We agreed the child would be born in the clan capital, and we will abide by that commitment. He paused to let the prospective grandfather express pleasure at the news and make a comment to Lewis about preparing an announcement. Mara, bless her heart, managed several minutes to chit-chat to give Yosef more time. When the delayed time out and heads turned back to Yosef, what had solidified in his mind was to be honest. Kalish, he said, starting off with a familiar address. Everything you say is rational. My problem is that I simply don't want to make the move. Not permanently. Much of the reason is that I view the Abersford area as my home. I was already taken from one home and cast here on Cadellium. It took 2 years before I could accept Abersford as my new home. Now you, and yes, logic, want me to uproot from this home and start again somewhere else. While I know it sounds childish, part of me wants to rail against the sense of unfairness. Haven't I had enough change for one lifetime? Is it too much to ask to live quietly where I choose? Lewis stirred in his chair, his jaw clenched, and Yosef felt certain he was about to storm at Yosef's attitude. By comparison, College sat calmly, a sympathetic expression softening his face.
Alas, Yosef. Would that the world lets us live the lives we want. In my youth, I wanted to be a horse breeder and trainer, which was impossible once my father chose me to be the next hetman. Then, and to this day, what I would like to do is work to provide for a life of security and peace for all my clanspeople. Yet I've always known there was more to it than my personal desires. Even before the Narthani threat, I spent most of my time dealing with other hetmen and clans, petty conflicts with Keelan Boyerman focused on their own districts, and not always on the good of the entire clan, and on and on. Then there's the Narthani. Never, in my worst imaginings of what it would be like to be hetman, did I conceive of fighting battles such as at Moreland City, or the level of threat presented by the Narthani, what you call an existential threat. In life, we often must do what is necessary, irrespective of our own wishes. I have done what I perceive to be necessary, and this is a reconciliation you'll have to come to for yourself.
Yosef felt afraid. Not like during the fight in the courtyard at St. Sidran's or waiting to ambush the Iwalis at Moreland City, but more of being forced to take a step in life that he dreaded.
It's not just my move into Kernford that you want, College, is it?
No, Yosef, it's not. You know things. Things we don't know here in Cadellium or ways of thinking we're not familiar with. You've proved that over and over. Not just the ether, the kerosene, and all the other innovations. The advice you gave at St. Sidran's and Moreland City and the insights you've shared with Abbot Sistian and me on likely actions of the Narthani. We need these from you.
College, I'm not the source of all knowledge. I could tell you things, give opinions and advice that might be wrong, and people would die because of my errors.
How is that different from what many do?
Rejoined College.
Life is acting. That our actions sometimes have tragic consequences is simply the way life is. To not act, to not give advice, is to act by inaction. You don't think of yourself as a leader. But what is a leader?
I see a leader as someone at the front of whatever is happening. Someone others want to follow.
Those are reasonable descriptions of some leaders, though not all. Redrew Breeson can be called the leader of theophists, yet he holds no position of authority over anyone. Dira Bainham is a leader of medicants because of reputation and the fact that other medicants place great emphasis on her opinions. Jinfor Moreland was not a great leader, though he was a hetman of his clan. His people followed him because of his position, not because of their regard. You are a leader whether you want to be or not, because your past actions have proved to be worth following or considering. Whether you call yourself a leader or not is irrelevant.
What if some advice I give leads to disaster?
It could happen. Still, others are required to evaluate what they hear and make their own decisions. After all, advice is just that, not commandments. You also have to ask yourself the cost of not giving advice.
Answer me honestly, Yosef. What would have happened at St. Sidran's if you hadn't suggested letting the Buldorians into the courtyard?
Yosef hesitated to say what he knew would support Kulich's arguments. Silence dragged on as the other three waited and watched. Finally and reluctantly, Yosef replied. Dennis believed there was no way to defend the Abbey with the number of men they had. The Baldorians would have come over the walls, killed most of the people, enslaved the rest, and burned the Abbey. But they didn't, said Kalich, because you took the risk of giving an opinion. It could have been the wrong thing to advise, complained Yosef. Yes, it could, but it wasn't. In the same manner, what would have happened if you'd been silent at Moreland City? Yosef didn't say anything. The answer was obvious. He felt depressed that he couldn't think of a single argument that wasn't selfish, and felt angry that he couldn't be selfish. What do you expect of me? Asked Yosef, his manner and tone suggesting defeat. Kalich did his best not to smile. He sensed he was going to get his way, and Yosef would concede in doing what Kalich thought he should be willing to do without convincing. Besides moving to Kernford, said Kalich, we need every bit of advice you can muster up on options and dealing with the Narthoni. You've already shown you have priceless advice with what you did at St. Sidran's and Moreland City. What more can you do? Kalich, I'm not a military genius of any kind. I don't know why I advised what I did those times. My only experience has been reading books on military history and playing some games of my people that involve tactics and strategy. Lewis grunted and Kalich smiled.
There you go, Yosef. Just when you try to tell us what you don't know, you pull new words out of the air. Tactics, strategy. I sense these are important. But what do they mean?
I'm sorry, Kalich, said Yosef. Once again, whenever I can't find a Kadeli word, I automatically fall back on my own language, English, without thinking.
In a conflict like we experienced when the Narthani invaded Moreland, strategy is the overall goal, while tactics are the details of how we achieve the goal. We wanted to drive the Narthani back. That was the strategy. How we did it was the tactics. Pretending a general assault on the center of their line, ambushing the Iwalese and attacking the Narthani flank. By another definition, strategy is concerned with the future, what you want to happen, and tactics involve the present, what you do at the moment to achieve the strategy.
Then, said Lewis thoughtfully, by those definitions, when the Baldorians attacked St. Sidran's, letting them inside the Abbey walls was the tactic to accomplish the objective of defending the Abbey. And what you did in both instances was advise on tactics, since these strategies were obvious. Is that how you see it, Yosef?
Well, yes, I suppose that's how it seems, Yosef said hesitantly.
Then that's what we need from you, said Kalich. Let us assume that the strategy is to stop the Narthani from absorbing any more clans. How do we do that? Vigorous defense of the existing border between the Narthani and the free clans? Attack the Narthani, even if they don't move first? What would be the best ways to stop the Narthani?
Lewis shook his head.
The words and definitions seem obvious, Kalich, but it doesn't help us understand how Yosef comes up with the specific ideas, or tactics, as he calls them. I agree that we need his advice, but he can't be everywhere, and I have been around him enough to sense he doesn't believe himself infallible. We need others, including you and me, to better evaluate his ideas and come up with those of our own.
Yes, Vordik, though I wonder if what he describes as tactics is something that our people would learn from experience. Consider Moreland City. If we had attacked the Narthani line directly, without forewarning of the consequences, we would have learned not to do it again.
we would have learned a tactic. Don't attack the Narthani strength. The problem is the learning experience would have been exceedingly painful. What Yosef did was state a principle. Don't attack a strong point.
Or the complementary statement, said Vortig. If you must attack, do it at a weak point.
Yet these seem obvious things to do or avoid.
True, said Kulich,
in hindsight.
We will, unfortunately, gain experience in this magnitude of fighting.
Yet experience can be a hard taskmaster.
Yosef, you told me before that you had read about the history of military conflicts and that was where you might have gained insights that helped you give advice. Are there general principles or tactics you can teach?
Yosef pondered the question. As a teenager and into undergraduate college, he had been part of gamester groups. They would argue for hours over details of tactics and their naivete pretending to be experts. He felt embarrassed to remember self-important arguments over which of three famous military treatises was the most influential. Jomini's The Art of War, Clausewitz's On War, and Sun Tzu's The Art of War. An idea rose to Yosef's consciousness. The way Kulich explained it, maybe there was a way he could help.
You mean help those commanding in the field to flatten their learning curve?
Kulich grimaced and Lewis clucked disgustedly.
Yosef, said Kulich with feigned patience.
Oh, sorry, said Yosef.
What I meant to say is that you're asking if I can remember basic principles of battles, then maybe the clansmen could avoid some of the worst errors.
Yes, said Lewis. What you advised us at Moreland City now seems to me mostly obvious, though I wouldn't have thought of it at the time. We need to get our minds thinking differently.
To get you... Yosef stopped himself before he said, kick-started. Pointed in the right direction.
That's a way to put it, Yosef. Can you help? Can you point us in the right direction?
I'll try to remember what I can and write it down, said Yosef. I can't guarantee how complete it will be, and for God's sake, don't assume it's authoritative. At best, it will be general principles.
At the same time, he wondered exactly how much he would remember. It would be the first time he'd tried to use his enhanced recall for extensive non-science writings. Even if he could image entire works in his mind, he hadn't yet dared attempt complete books or even chapters. After all, a normal person couldn't do such things. Besides, how would the Gedali understand whole texts on subjects that had no foundation in this world? Even with military theory, too much that didn't fit this world would seep through. He would have to give it careful thought and summarize parts that would be understandable and acceptable in Anyar.
All right, Kulich, I'll do the best I can.
Good, Yosef. If possible, have something done in another month. Hetman Oros has sent notice to all clans for an all-clan conclave in Oros City. The only topic will be the Narthani and what we plan to do about them. I'm hoping all the clans finally realize the danger and we can come to an agreement on our actions. Naturally, you will need to come with me.
Oh, hell.
Now, I think Vortig wants to look at progress in the Cannon Foundry. We'll set up another foundry in Kernford as soon as you succeed in casting a larger barrel than the swivels you've done so far. You two go ahead and I'll visit with Mara.
Yosef guided Lewis to the foundry, leaving Kulich and Mara sitting in the meeting room.
I must say, Mara, I'm a little surprised and yes, disappointed that you didn't speak up to help me with your husband. I know how much you want to move back to Kernford, and you also know how duty to the clan comes before personal desires. Yosef may not originally be a Keelander, but he's a member of both the clan and our family now,
so he should better recognize what he's obligated to do.
First, Father, he is my husband, and if there's a loyalty conflict between him and you, he will always come first. And no, I don't see a conflict between duty to the clan and husband. As you say, Yosef is not from Kedalium, and how he reacts will never be the same as someone raised his whole life in Keelan province. That doesn't mean he won't support the clan. It just might not be with the timing and level of enthusiasm you want. I believe you'll find him important in ways probably neither of us can predict or even possibly appreciate. Yes, he can be frustrating, including times when he dithers about doing something we believe is obvious and necessary. He once told me a quote that had been used to describe his people. An allied realm leader had said that they will always end up doing the right thing after trying everything else. I believe all of us just have to be patient and trust that he will always, or at least most of the time, come around to doing what's necessary.
I understand, Mara, and I didn't mean to sound critical. It was just my own expectation obscuring that you might see things differently than me, and I have to trust your instinct about Yosef. So, do I perceive correctly that you're moving to Kernford is certain?
Yes, Father, I think you can. As Yosef and I have talked the last months, I've seen him slowly accept what's necessary. What you saw today is simply some residual resistance. Don't worry. I'll work on him gently. And I've several ideas and arguments to ease the transition for him.
Mara's machinations. Yosef fought a persistent and futile rearguard action.
One negative about moving is I won't have wife or Kales to give me my monthly sparring lesson.
I suppose I could find someone in Kernford, though no one else is likely to be as good as Kales.
Didn't Kales tell you? He's moving to Kernford. His wife is originally from Salford on the coast, and she has many relatives there and around Kernford.
Mara saw no reason to bother Yosef with details such as how she had talked to Kales after having to ask half of the town where he lived. She learned that he and his wife had a cozy, well-maintained and furnished house on the western edge of Abersford. Tina Kales was a plain-looking woman until she smiled, and her friendly, down-to-Anyar personality shined. She was suitably impressed when the hetman's daughter and the wife of Yosef Kolsko came calling, more so than her husband. He received a stern look and a preemptive order to show proper respect and fetch their pregnant visitor a chair to their porch. There, the three of them sat facing a lovely view of hills to the west.
"Don't mind why for," said Kolsko Keelan. He never did learn proper respect for visitors, and ignore the scowl. His look is far worse than his bite.
Mara wasn't so sure. Her few exchanges with Kales had fit Yosef's description of a dangerous man with a murky off-island history, but his gaze of open affection and tolerance for his wife seemed real. In the next quarter hour, Mara learned from the vociferous woman that she had been made a widow during the raid on St. Sidran's. Her husband was one of the few to die defending the courtyard. He had been one of Kales's cousins. She and Kales had known each other as children, before he sailed off Kedalium and returned 23 years later. Her three children were on their own, and she and Kales had married only 2 months ago. Mara, in return, recounted a few items of her own history, though she downplayed being the headman's daughter. As soon as she could slip into the conversation, she mentioned that she and Yosef would be moving to Kernford.
"Which is why I wanted to talk to you, Sir Kales. Yosef values the training you've given him and how you looked after him during the Moreland City battle."
"I suppose I did at times," said Kales. "Other times I was keeping up with him, especially once he decided to operate half the Nathani cannon by himself." Mara was sure she detected approval in the normally blasé man.
"We both appreciate how you kept an occasional eye on him since he came back. You know, with
worries about possible Nathani agents and how valuable Yosef has been. I've been talking with the Hetman. My father would value your moving to Kurnford to help keep a safe eye on Yosef and train Keelan men in the things Yosef says you're so good at. Another detail Mera omitted was that neither Yosef nor her father had thought about Kael's moving.
Kael tugged at his pointed beard.
Kurnford. Well, it's a real city. Not that I have anything against Abersford, but I wouldn't mind it. He turned to his wife. What about you, Tina? You've lived here a long time. Would you consider moving to Kurnford?
Why for? I'd have to think about it. I have friends here, but not much family. Two of my children are in Kurnford or nearby, and you know I have a sister and a brother there. The rest of my family is in Salford, and Kurnford's a little farther away than Abersford, but I don't visit Salford that often.
That's probably easier to visit Salford from Kurnford than Abersford, since there are regular carriages and wagons to and from Salford, suggested Kales, who sat farther back in his chair and spoke more to himself than to Mera or his wife. You know, it's certainly a lot more interesting with Kolskull around. Carnigan's right that the man needs someone looking after him. If Kolskull moves, then I assume Carnigan and Balwis will go too. I'd miss the three of them. And there's nothing here for me to do during the day. We don't need coin, but I wouldn't mind helping to get other Keelanders ready for whatever comes against the Narthani.
Kales refocused on the two women.
Send Kolskull Keelan. Tina and I will talk this over and let you know what we decide.
Mera bid her goodbyes and walked home humming to herself. Now she'd have to tell her father that she knew of an expert hand-to-hand combat man who could be persuaded to move to Kurnford and become involved in training Keelan men. She'd also let Yosef know that Kales intended to move to Kurnford.
Hello, Carnigan,
Mera said, when she found the big man weeding flowers behind the cathedral.
Mera, how are you this day?
It had taken Mera several months to convince Carnigan to address her by her first name, and once he acquiesced, it was as if he switched to a different personality. Now he seemed comfortable treating her as a true friend.
I'm fine. And the baby has started to make itself known, kicking and squirming, she said, stroking her abdomen. But there's something else I wanted to talk to you about. You may have heard that Yosef and I are moving to Kurnford.
Carnigan's usually impassive face fell.
No, I hadn't heard. I suppose that makes sense, what with Yosef's projects expanding so much and his becoming more important to the clan.
Yes, said Mera, though I'm worried about him. As you know, he sometimes doesn't take enough care of himself, and I'd be so relieved if you were still around. You know he thinks of you as his best friend. Is there any way you could also move to Kurnford?
Carnigan's face lit up for a moment, then settled back into passivity.
I'm not sure. I would have to talk to Abbot Sistine about that. I don't know if it's possible.
Why don't you see him as soon as you can and talk about it with him? I'm sure something could be worked out.
Okay, Mera, I will, he said doubtfully.
Thanks, Carnigan. I'll let you get back to work.
Mera walked off thinking, now I need to talk with Sistine about how good it would be for both Yosef and Carnigan if his friend could move to Kurnford the same time we do.
Hello, Filton, I see you're busy as always, Mera said, interrupting Filton Fuller and three other workers. Is that the new kerosene distillation column you're working on?
Yes, isn't it a beauty? Almost 30 feet tall and able to produce 300 lanterns worth of kerosene in a single run. There's still more residue than we'd like, but...
Filton rambled on into technical details that didn't interest Mera. She let him run down his enthusiasm and waited for an opening.
So, Filton, have you heard that Yosef and I are moving to Kurnford?
Wonderful, Mara. My family and I also will be moving there. We just decided. I'll set up a new distillation factory, as Yosef calls them. Nerlin was unsure of the idea, but the increased pay was too good an opportunity to miss. I'm excited about building the factory brand new, instead of constantly modifying the original here in Abersford. I've discussed it with Yosef, and the plan is to produce daily 3 times as much as here. The distance to transport the crude oil is farther, but we will build much larger wagons and have people looking at oil seeps in northern Keelan. And of course, anywhere Yosef is has to be more interesting than where he's not. We're already packing our possessions, and I'm planning to be in Kernford in 2 6-days. Mara congratulated him on his new position and made her exit. Well, that was easy, she thought. Yosef had said he wanted Filton to move, but she hadn't realized it would be so soon and so definite. One more person Yosef felt comfortable with accounted for. She visited Cadwalf Bainham, but had doubts he could be enticed. Only a few moments of discussion confirmed it was not practical for Cadwalf to move to Kernford. The plan for the University of Abersford called for 4 initial departments, one of which was applied mathematics. The Bainham son had taken all of the mathematics Yosef had to teach and had gone beyond. Even before the university formally functioned, a small cadre of mathematics scholastics and aspiring students had gathered in Abersford. When Mara mentioned the possibility of moving to Kernford, Cadwalf declared he had no intention of moving, for unspecified personal reasons, no matter what happened to the university plan. She would have to talk with Yosef about what to do with the university. Mara also considered whether it was practical to convince Bronwyn Merton Linton to relocate, but she immediately dismissed the possibility. Yosef had had an affair with Bronwyn before he and Mara met, and a child resulted. At Yosef's suggestion, Bronwyn had joined the marriage of her sister and her husband, and they had merged the 2 farms inherited from the sister's parents. The child, Aragorn, was developing well in a healthy family and felt secure in that environment. Her final stop was at the Snarling Greco Inn and Pub, whose lower floor had been the main social stop for Yosef since he'd arrived in Cadellium. He spent at least 1 night a 6-day there, usually with Carnegie, regularly with Filton, and occasionally with Cadwalf and Kales, drinking ale and telling stories that no one had ever heard. At the pub, he'd had the initial inspiration to produce ether, and there Mara suspected he first felt part of the community. It was mid-afternoon when she walked into the pub. Only 4 patrons occupied tables, though she knew the number would steadily increase as people ended their workday, to peak well after most people's evening meal. No one noticed her, neither the few patrons nor the single barmaid snoozing at a table. She was about to wake the barmaid when the innkeeper walked in from a back room carrying a tray of steins. He set the tray down on a table and hurried over to her. She occasionally visited the pub with Yosef, either sitting with an ale, until she became with child, or participating in a corner of the pub dedicated to Go players, the game Yosef said was nearly identical to one played in his homeland. Yet she had never come to the Snarling Greco alone or at this time of day.
San Colsco Keelan, said the innkeeper.
Can I help you?
Hello, Sir Kuwaith. Could we sit and talk for a moment?
Certainly, certainly, said the surprised man, conveying his puzzlement at what Yosef's wife and the hetman's daughter had said to him.
He pulled out a chair for her from the nearest table and sat across from her.
Sir Kuwaith, my husband Yosef has enjoyed his evenings here at the Snarling Greco, and he has told me that your beer is considered the best in Abersford. Unfortunately, we are moving to Kernford in a few 6 days, and Yosef will miss being your regular customer. I was wondering if you might consider establishing another inn and pub in Kernford.
Why, no, I can't say I have, said the obviously surprised Kuwaith.
Why would I?
Abersford is my wife's and my home. We were both born here.
I didn't necessarily mean to ask if you yourself might move to Kernford, only that you open another establishment there. You might be the owner or part owner to ensure that the business was properly set up and the beer equaled the quality you have here. Another person could be the proprietor, either working for you or a partner.
Kuwaith listened with a puzzled expression, resting his chin on his palm.
I realize there are already many pubs in Kernford, Mera continued. But I'm certain that when we move, Joseph and some of the other people who move at the same time would become customers. Naturally, I would accompany Joseph occasionally, and it's possible patrons of the other pubs would come to a new pub known to be the favorite of Joseph Kolsko and members of the Hetman's family. You might even give it the same name, the Snarling Greco. You know, if it was successful, you might even open other pubs in other cities and provinces.
Kuwaith licked his lips, his eyes taking on a distant focus, as if making a mental calculation.
Yes, such a pub might do quite well. I could spend a few days each month there. My cousin Aberlaw brews for the Happy Stallion, and I know he's wanted to operate his own pub. I wonder.
Mera allowed a smile to play at the corners of her mouth. She had been prepared to offer coin incentives to get Kuwaith interested. There was no need. Once he was committed, she would persuade him and his cousin, if that's who ended up operating the Kernford franchise, as Joseph called such arrangements, to make the Kernford Snarling Greco structure and ambiance look as much like the one in Abersford as possible.